Thank you all for coming today. My name is Danielle Deem. I'm a senior data scientist lead out of the Azure Machine Learning Product Group. So I'm a data scientist by background. I work with external customers building out end-to-end solutions using the Cortana Analytics Suite. My team does a lot of stuff related to predictive maintenance, which is what I'm talking about today. So I'm going to show you some cool demos of what we do that are representative of the work that we do with customers. And then I'm also going to talk some about data science and the modeling aspects of predictive maintenance. Okay, so you've all seen this slide, the Cortana Analytics Suite. I'm going to specifically talk about a few components within that suite today. So this is the obligatory slide where I tell you about what I'm going to be talking about. So I'm going to be talking about IoT related to bringing data right off of devices, and then using tools like Azure Data Factory and Azure Event Hub to read in data and orchestrate data movements. Then I'll be talking about using Azure SQL Database to store information about engine states, and then Azure Machine Learning to predict how much time left a machine has, Azure Stream Analytics to process the data in real time, and then I'll be talking about the visualization layer and then acting upon the results. So that's a 20-second overview of what I'll be talking about, but I'll obviously be going into a lot more detail. Okay, so here's an outline. I'm going to start with some general predictive maintenance use cases. When people say, what is predictive maintenance? It can mean a lot of different things. So I'm going to outline some typical predictive maintenance use cases and then focus on one in particular for the demo. I'm going to be talking then about how to build an end-to-end solution with the Cortana Analytics Suite to solve a predictive maintenance use case, and then talk a little bit about the data. So predictive maintenance use cases are, they sound really great and they sound straightforward, but often getting the data that you need to do these is not straightforward, so that's why I have a major focus on that. And then I'll be talking a little bit about the modeling and evaluation that goes behind this. And we have a relatively small group today, so if any of you guys have questions or clarifying questions during the talk, feel free to interrupt and just raise your hand. Depending on time and so forth, I might take questions during the talk. Okay, so predictive maintenance. What is predictive maintenance? Why are people talking about it more now? And how is it relevant to IoT? So predictive maintenance is a really important task in a lot of Internet of Things applications. And the reason why is that we can get a lot of data off of the things, and we want those things to continue working. And so in predictive maintenance, the goal is really to improve production or maintenance efficiency. And how this is different from traditional predictive maintenance is that we're no longer doing things based on time schedules. So you know, you go get your car maintained maybe every 6 months, you get your oil changed after a certain amount of mileage. Rather than doing those things based on time or how often you use it, for example, we want to really take information about how that usage is affecting the device or the thing and do maintenance based on that instead. So it's doing smarter maintenance. And often with IoT, we'll have things like data streams with time-varying features, which is a lot different than the kind of data we had in the past. And so this is a really data-driven approach that I'll be talking about today, doing tasks like failure prediction, fault detection, and maintenance action recommendations. Basically, any task that improves production or maintenance efficiency can be classified within predictive maintenance. So here are some typical predictive maintenance use cases. These are ones that we've seen all of these on my team alone, so these are very typical use cases. Obviously, predictive maintenance can span a lot more different types of use cases, but these are just some of the typical ones. So in aerospace, for example, they want to predict what is the likelihood of delay due to mechanical issues. I know we all hate getting stuck and hate getting delayed. And so if they could actually prevent delay due to mechanical issues, it would really improve customer satisfaction. When is the aircraft component likely to fail next? So not only just when is the aircraft going to need maintenance, what is those actual components on the aircraft going to need maintenance? In the utility sector, there's a lot of predictive maintenance use cases. Things around solar panels or wind turbines, for example, when are those likely going to fail next? Circuit breakers, which circuit breakers are likely going to fail in the next month, for example? Or even ATMs, disposing notes, which ATMs are going to have problems dispensing those notes in the future? Or in the manufacturing world, there's obviously a lot of predictive maintenance there, and which component will pass the next stage of testing or the root cause of failure. And then transportation and logistics are another common area. For example, elevator maintenance, you heard, I believe Joseph mentioned it this morning, which maintenance task should I perform on my elevator? So these are some pretty typical predictive maintenance use cases. So with that, I want to show you how you can actually build out a solution using the Cortana Analytics Suite to solve predictive maintenance use cases. So I'm going to demo today aircraft engine demo, and I'll walk you through the scenario and the data that we use for this. So this is Kyle. Kyle manages a team that maintains aircrafts. His job is to make sure all 100 aircrafts are running properly, and especially that the aircraft engines don't need service. He obviously wants to prevent delays due to mechanical issues especially, so that his customers will be happy. Obviously, there can be weather-related events and other types of events that happen that impact delays, but his focus on is, can I prevent delays due to mechanical issues? Unfortunately, engines occasionally show signs of problems and must be taken out of service for maintenance or replacement. They might not be efficient, they might be close to the end of their life cycle. And so to eliminate this occurrence, Kyle has to really look across his fleet, maintain operations, figure out which engines to service, which resources to utilize in order to minimize those delays. So Cortana Analytics, the rescue. You can answer questions like, how long did engines run in the past? Which are showing signs of failure? And the really important question, which engines are likely to fail in the future so that you can actually do maintenance scheduling based on the predictions from the model. So this is the demo components that I'll be showing you. I'll be walking through each of these. So what we use here is actually publicly available data. So you could actually recreate this demo if you wanted to yourself, taking the publicly available data and recreating the entire flow. So what we do is we take data from NASA. NASA has published this aircraft engine run to failure data. We take that data and we train a machine learning model based on it. We then use that model to actually predict based on the stream of data that we send in. So basically, we have this training data from NASA, and then we stream in data simulating the aircraft's running. And so you can see the end-to-end flow that I'll be showing in a few minutes. And if the demo gods are on my sides, everything will be working great. And I am plugged into Ethernet, so that's always a good thing. So I'll show you the different components, and we'll walk through the different parts of this demo. Okay. Awesome. So this is a Power BI dashboard. There's a couple of different components on here. On the top left, so these three bars here, these are actually results that we get out of the ASA stream. So these are our live streams that are coming in. The data is being fed through Event Hub, and we can see the streams of data coming in over time. So this is an example where we're seeing, and this is an aggregate over the fleet. So all of the aircrafts that are currently in flight, let's look at the average of a particular sensor over time and see that data streaming in. We can also see things like how many flights have happened today, or how many lines of data, which is each sensor, how many of those lines have been processed over time. Then in the upper right, this is results that are coming in a batch process. So the left was the hot path or real-time stuff. On the right, we have batch process. This is stuff that we get after aggregating the data. So we see how many aircrafts we've seen over the entire period, when they were last predicted, and how many lines of data we've processed through ADF. I will mention that this is 7 hours, I believe, off. It's UTC time, which is why it's 10 p.m. And then on the bottom, you actually get results from the machine learning model. So this is where the machine learning is integrated in. We get to see the results in looking at remaining useful life. So we're taking this aircraft engine run to failure data, and I'll show you more details of the ML model later. But to give you context, it shows the remaining useful life that's predicted for each of those aircrafts. So those aircrafts have those sensor data coming in. We use those sensor data to infer how much longer will those aircrafts last. And then the maintenance person could look at this to determine which engines they actually service so that they're less likely to have delays in the future. And then on the right-hand side, bottom right, we also have that same prediction. But here I'm actually looking at the prediction over time. So this is one of those interesting things about predicting with machine learning when you have time, is that you can not only get a prediction today, so how many, what's your remaining useful life today for this aircraft engine, but you can look in the past, using that sensor data in the past, what did I predict the remaining useful life was like yesterday? And that can actually be really useful to see, am I seeing a downward trend, a consistent pattern, and I'm predicting this remaining useful life continues to go down, or something really happened strange with the sensor values indicating a real jump in remaining useful life that's going to happen. And then, of course, with Power BI dashboards, you can click in and see more visualizations. You can filter and say, oh, I want to look at engine 2 and see what is the remaining useful life over time. So the maintenance worker could build layers of reports where they are looking at different types of visualizations, different things that they want to examine, and then have an upper level dashboard view that gives something like the view of the fleet. So this is the dashboard. This is the kind of nice part where you get to see what happens at the end. But now I want to show you each of the individual components that are underneath it. So I'm going to jump a little bit back and forth, so I apologize for that. So this is just to remind you of what the picture looks like. We have that real-time data streaming in. It comes in through Event Hub and goes through ASA. So the data that comes into Event Hub, just imagine that data is coming once every 15 minutes for aircrafts. And then we speed that up so that in the demo, it comes once every second. So we have data coming in once every second through Azure Event Hub. Then we use Azure Stream Analytics to aggregate that data to say what's my things like average sensor value over that period of time. We might not need every single individual sensor value, but maybe we just need an aggregate of that, and that will be good enough. So we use Azure Stream Analytics to do that first round of aggregation and also to visualize those results. So ASA, we have that layer of aggregation that goes to the SQL database. And then we have another layer where it just simply feeds the data into Power BI. So I'll show you that. So this is the Azure portal. Go to Stream Analytics. This is our main query here. So our input is coming from that Event Hub. Our query, although it looks a little bit long, it's super simple. Basically, all we're doing is taking things like averages of sensor values and putting them together. ASA right now has a limitation of only doing 14 aggregations. You can actually get around that by doing groups of aggregations. So it looks like we have two groups, but it's really simply doing averages of these different sensor values. And then we also do these calculations down here where we're aggregating how often those values are coming in along with the average, because we want to do a weighted average later in time. But it's not too important if you don't understand that. Okay, so that's the Stream Analytics main job that is sending data to Azure SQL. And then we have the query, the Azure Stream Analytics query that sends data right to the Power BI dashboard. So our input, again, is that Event Hub. The query in this case is a really simple query that just basically takes the data, does some casting, but basically just takes that input data and puts it right out to Power BI. So here I created a data set in Power BI, and that's all I have to do in order to create a visualization on my Power BI dashboard. So again, two Stream Analytics queries. One is doing some layer of aggregation by a time window that's sending data to Azure SQL. Another one that's sending data right to Power BI. Now, once I have data in Azure SQL, I actually need to do a little bit more munging before I can call out to the machine learning model. So before I show you that and show you the Azure Data Factory, I'm going to jump to the Azure Machine Learning, where I've built the models. So Azure Machine Learning this is the studio. It's a really nice user interface where you can build machine learning experiments and complete your complete machine learning workflow. So here we have the concept of there's training experiments where you take your input data, your historical data, build a model on that to predict based on that historical data. Then you take that model and you deploy it in a scoring experiment. You take that model and you put it in a scoring experiment. That scoring experiment is basically setting up your web service for deployment. So with those two concepts, let me jump into the training experiment. So in this training experiment, I'm actually taking the publicly available NASA data. So they actually have three different data sources. They give training data for the NASA aircraft engines. And let me just show you what that looks like. So this training data is basically one row per flight. So we have ID is the flight cycle is basically the ID is the aircraft flight cycle is basically the flight number. And then we have lots of different sensor values about that aircraft. So you see here we have lots of different rows from that first aircraft, and then we'd obviously have, if it went down longer, other aircrafts as well. I think there's 100 total. So we have this training data that gives us information about the flights. And in this training data, a really important concept is that it's actually run to failure data. Now what that means is in this training data, all of these aircrafts, the engines were actually failed at the end of the run. And this is so it was a lab environment where they were simulating how these sensors would work and pushing them to the limits to when the engine would fail. So that is a very important concept because that allows us to create basically the labels and for our machine learning model to learn what the relationship is between the sensors and how much the remaining useful life is of that aircraft engine. So that's our training data, again, aircraft engines. And then we have two other pieces of information. There's this test data set, which is a very similar schema. So you have, that's before it was parsed. So let's look after it was parsed. So we a very similar schema where we have ID and cycle and all the sensor information. The key difference here is that these engines were not run to failure. So we actually don't know how many more cycles they have. And that's why we have this ground truth file, which tells us for the cycle, for the engines in the test data set, when did they actually fail? So it's just a one column with when they actually failed. So we use the training data to train a model using the information about when those engines failed. So I'll show you what that looks like. Here I want to predict how much time is left. So, and I've subset it out, so I just am showing a few sensor values here. But I've taken out, I basically take what was that max cycle that it went to, and then created this new column, remaining useful life, so that the machine learning model can learn what the relationship is between those sensors and that remaining useful life label. Again, we figured that out based on when that maximum cycle was, because this is run to failure data. So the machine learning model trains on this label, remaining useful life, RUL. So here I'm training a few models, and then I'm running this experiment, and I'm selecting the best model. After I've selected the best model, what I do, and the UI can actually help you do this as well, and there's this button, Set Up Web Service. It can help you create a scoring experiment automatically, but I'm doing a little bit more manipulation than normal. So here, what I do is I click this button, Save as a Trained Model, and that's basically saving that training model, and then I can put it into a scoring experiment so I can deploy this as a web service. So my scoring experiment looks like, it takes that trained model, so after I've saved that trained model, I drag it over here as this boosted decision tree trained model, and then I need to set up my schema for my web service. Now, what I want my web service to do is I want it to take input data from the flight. So I want it to take those sensor values. I want it to use that trained model and predict how much time left that flight engine has. So here I have enter data. I'm just using that to simply set up the schema of the web service. So here I'm saying I'm going to need these fields in order to predict. And then I have the web service input, which is coming from there. So that enter data module, I don't actually use that module in the web service. It just sets up the schema of the web service. So that's the schema of the web service. It then takes that trained model, scores those data points, and then here I'm selecting out a few columns. Let's see what that looks like. I'm selecting ID, cycle, and score labels, and then putting that back out of the web service. And then there's this, everyone talks about this one-click button. It really is this one-click button at the bottom, deploy web service. And that model is now a regular REST API that can be consumed. So once you've done that, you come over here into the web services part, and this is where you get your API key, your information about that model. Now what I do is now that I have this model, I want to deploy it in production. You could just do things like click this button, download Excel workbook, and enter your sensor values in and get your prediction. But in this case, I really want to operationalize the whole end-to-end flow. I don't want to do one time, you know, here's my input data, give me the prediction, although that can be useful at times. What I want to do is I want to take this model and actually deploy it within this end-to-end flow. And so how you do that is you use Azure Data Factory. So here I'm going into the new Azure portal and jumping into a data factory that has been built for this demo. And here I'll show you the diagram. And before I do that, actually, I'm just going to remind you what I'm doing with ADF in this case. So what I'm doing with ADF in this case is I'm actually consuming the machine learning model. How that works is the data that is pushed from ASA into ADF is then, into SQL, I mean, is then moved, it orchestrated through ADF. So through ADF, we take the data that's in Azure SQL and we do further aggregations. For example, I want to actually get all of those sensor data, I want to get them at the level of the flight. My training data, as you saw, was at the level of the flight. So I want to aggregate information to have lots of different features so I have flight level information. So when the data is stored in SQL, I then use ADF to do a SQL query to aggregate the data to the level of the flight and do some feature engineering, which I'll talk a little bit more later. Do things like look at the standard deviation of those sensor values, things like not just the averages. And then what I do is I consume the machine learning API that I just showed you through ADF and put the results back in SQL. So ADF orchestrates this flow. It actually runs every 15 minutes in this case. Orchestrates the flow where it takes the data in SQL, calls out to the machine learning model, puts the data back in SQL. And then Power BI is connected to SQL to visualize the results. So this is the ADF pipelines. It's exactly what I showed you on the PowerPoint. Here, the data is Azure SQL. I have this pipeline where it's actually moving it to blob storage. If I just click on here, what it's doing, you can look at the source, and there's actually some queries that are hidden in here where I'm doing that aggregation. So that is moving the data, is aggregating the data, and then here is the scoring pipeline, and that's where I call out to the machine learning model. So if I click on this, if you remember, I showed you how you could get your machine learning, your URI and API key from the model. It's going to be used within this scoring pipeline. So the scoring pipeline is where I'm using the machine learning model. And you can see that it's going from blob ingress going to blob egress, and it uses the ML experiment. The ML experiment is a linked service here, and that is where you put in your URI and your API key. So through ADF and through these set of pipelines as well as linked services and data sets, I'm telling ADF to orchestrate the flow of aggregation, call out to ML, put back in SQL database, and then later I visualize the results that are stored in SQL. So that is that flow here. Go back here. So that was showing the movement of 1, 2, 3, 4, and then here the connection of SQL to Power BI is, again, very simple. You can do that from the Power BI interface or using Power BI Desktop. So that is how that is under what's under the hood of this, of the hot path streaming of ASA and the cold path that's showing the ML model being consumed. Okay, that is that this for this demo. I do have a bunch more slides to go through, but I want to see if there's any questions on the demo before I continue. Yep.
What's preventing you connecting from the stream analytics to the machine learning and just populate the BI?
That's a great question. So the question was why can you not connect your ASA right to your machine learning and connect Power BI to the results? So that's actually an integration that's in private preview or public preview right now, I don't remember which one, but that integration is coming. There are situations where you want to do it and situations where you don't. Now, in this demo, I've sped it up, so it's really fast, but in the scenario in here, I don't think you'd actually do that, because I think you'd want to schedule the results to be done, you know, at the end of the flight or at the end of the day for the next day of maintenance workers. So there's definitely some scenarios where that hot path of call out to ML in real time is very valid. And I think this demo could be extended for that. So an example would be, you have this, you know, live streaming sensor data. So we see this line, those lines up top, which update pretty frequently. what I would want to do with the hot path, that kind of analysis, is I'd want to actually run anomaly detection to see, you know, is there any sensors that are going strange per aircraft, and use a machine learning model to do that in real time. And so that is a great scenario for that hot path analysis. So yeah. Another question?
Yeah, in the cold path, is it really mandatory all the time to use blob storage at any given point of time? Because there are cases where the data, we have case scenarios where the data has to actually go back into a relational store, which is like their enterprise data store kind of scenarios.
Yeah, that's a good question. So for the batch execution service at this time, you do need to use blob storage. Okay, if there's no more questions, I'm going to continue to do.
So one of the things we didn't see was how you actually formatted the data. So taking sensor generated data and then turning it into something that's predictive, because you've got to be able to, there's got to be some lead time between your prediction and failure, right?
Yeah. So that, like the feature engineering step.
Yeah.
I'll talk a little bit more in detail about that here. And if I don't answer it in my next slides, bring it back up at the end of the session, because it's a good question. So the question is about how do you format the data and munge it in a way that you can actually do prediction? Because it's often things like, you don't need that raw sensor value that matters. It's really like the things like the aggregation of the sensors over time that matters and things like that.
Time series.
Yes, exactly. So I'll talk a little bit about that with some basic methodologies here. With data science, the awesome thing is there's always cooler and better methods too. So I'll talk about basic ways to do that here, and then ways you could extend that as well. Okay, so predictive maintenance, a lot of people want to do this. And people come to us and with predictive maintenance use cases, and these are some good ways to say, are you ready? So the first question to ask is whether you're ready. Is your question actually sharp? People come and say, I want to do predictive maintenance. Okay, but what is your question? What do you actually want to do? So I want to do things like predict whether component X will fail in the next Y days. You want to be specific about what exactly you're trying to do and not just have vague things, or I want to get insights about the data. If you really want to build a machine learning model and deploy it, you need to have a really sharp question. The second thing is measure data. Data measures what they actually care about. So we've had a bunch of use cases where we've had data and it wasn't actually at the level, or we didn't have identifiers at the level that we wanted to predict. So if we had sensor values about the aircraft but we didn't have information about the individual components, it's very hard to then predict at the component level. So you need to have identifiers at the level you're predicting. Third thing is obviously data is accurate. You can't just have big data and solve the world's problems with it. You need to actually have accurate data. It seems very straightforward, but people often forget this. Failures need to actually be really failures as well. The human, often having some sort of human label is very helpful. So having humans actually understand that those are true failures. So the best kind of machine learning data sets that we've run into for these types of problems are where, say in a manufacturing floor, there's some automated test that goes through and says, you know, this is likely to fail or not based on some sort of threshold it has in domain context. And then what happens at the next stage of the production line is that some human goes and says, you know, that was actually really a failure, or no, that wasn't actually really a failure. So having those kind of human labels, if that's possible, are really helpful to know, because the machine learning model is only going to learn based on the data that you give it. So having those sorts of labels are often very helpful to build a really accurate and really great machine learning model. Fourth one is data is connected. So you need to have linkable data sets. You don't want to just have aircraft sensor data and then component data and then not be able to say, you know, those components belong to those aircrafts. It seems very straightforward, but it's one of those things that you want to really make sure that all of the data that you need can be linked together. And then, of course, you know, big data is awesome, so a lot of data is good. So it would be difficult to predict if you don't have very many examples. So this is actually probably one of the hardest parts about doing these predictive maintenance use cases, is that we don't have a lot of failures to build the model with. So the more failures you have, it sounds bad, but the more failures, the better data you have to build a machine learning model. What we do to deal with these kind of problems is we don't actually predict failure itself, but the indicator before failure. So can we predict when something starts to go wrong? And you might have a lot of indicators or a lot of instances in your data set where things start to go wrong. And so you can build a machine learning model to predict that rather than the actual failure itself. There's other things that you can do to get around this as well. Things like using maintenance data. So you might want to use, you know, when the person went out, they actually said, you know, something's going wrong. That can be your indicator of failure. So a couple other qualification criteria notes. For an ML-based solution, you want to make sure that the problem is actually predictive in nature and that there's a clear path of action if potential failures are detected. If you're going to build a machine learning model and go through the trouble of building out this end-to-end solution, you want to make sure you can actually act upon that. So you want to build a model, for example, that predicts failures with a big enough window that you could act upon it. I don't want to build a machine learning model that's going to predict aircraft engine failure once the aircraft's already in flight. I want to predict, you know, the next flight or two flights out or maybe even seven flights out. So when you build the machine learning model, you should consider how far in advance do I need to predict in order for us to take action on that. And then, like I just mentioned, data with sufficient quality. So do you have enough failures? Do you have, is the non-IoT data in usable format? A lot of people, when they do IoT-related use cases, they don't think about, well, to do a machine learning model, we actually need that reference data, or we need to be able to link it to other data, not just those sensor values. So do you have that non-IoT data in a good usable format? For example, if we were doing this aircraft scenario with a real customer, we would ask for maintenance logs. Now those maintenance logs, the worst thing is when you have maintenance technicians writing in free text and everybody writes something different, and that data is basically useless. So think about that non-IoT data and getting things like categories of things that they've done, and think about that non-IoT data because it's very important. And then an asterisk is, can the domain knowledge, such as timings of maintenance recordings, be translated into usable data? One interesting thing is if you do take the approach of can we use maintenance data to get around the fact we don't have enough failure? So for example, can we use when a maintenance worker went to on site and they found a problem? We know that's a problem. Can we use that as an indicator of failure? Well, if the maintenance workers go every 2 weeks, well, your timing of failure is going to be really correlated with the maintenance scheduling. And so there's, you know, confounding factor there. So that's just something to keep in mind. So these are the type of data sources that we ask for when we start predictive maintenance use cases. So we ask for things like failure history, obviously, repair history as well, the machine condition, so that's the sensor data. We also ask for things like machine features. So can we use like how old the machine was or the production date, technical specifications. We ask for things like, do you have operating conditions? Maybe going back to that elevator example, do you have things like the location of the elevator? Maybe if it's in a building with air conditioning, it really matters compared to a building without air conditioning. So things about the environmental features of a machine's location. And then operator attributes, if you have a machine that is going to be, say you have a car, you know, it might matter who's driving it. So those are different data sources that we ask for when we start these kind of use cases. And then this is a step that often takes the most amount of time in doing, when you're doing data science and creating these sort of end-to-end demos, is when you're training the model, getting to the model stage, you actually have to do a lot to the data before you can train that model. So this goes to that question of you know, feature engineering. How do you actually take that, you know, that data, that set that I got from NASA? I don't just plug it into Azure ML and get magic out. That doesn't happen that way, I wish. So you have to do a little bit of munging to it, and you have to put some thought into, you know, doing this feature engineering work. So feature engineering is how you create, so features, I'm probably using way too much lingo, but features are basically the input variables into your machine learning model. So feature engineering is taking those input variables and creating actually extra variables as well, or munging the data in such a way that you can really create a great machine learning model. So in this case, in the aircraft engine demo, there's actually a lot more, at least 40 engineered features. So what we did is we have data at the flight level, And we created features like aggregate rolling windows of sensors. So you could do things like what are, and this is a lot of this is creativity along with domain expertise. So the domain expert might tell you, you know, it's not just that sensor value at that point in time, but really the aggregate of that sensor value over the last week. Or it's not just, you know, what that sensor value is now, but compared to how it was when it first started. So you can create features based on the data set that can be more predictive of the outcome than those raw sensor values. So that's taking that data. I will mention another part of that that's related to feature engineering, but it's a little bit different, is you don't you often don't want to put those raw sensor values in, even with this feature engineering, right into the model. Often what you want to do is you want to aggregate the data to some level. So for instance, if I had sensor values every second coming off that aircraft, I probably wouldn't create a machine learning model that uses those raw those every second values along with rolling windows and stuff like that. What I would do is I would aggregate that data to some reasonable level, and that aggregation is, it's hard to know what that right number is, but you often try a different number of different things. But for instance, I might aggregate that data to an hour or a day level, depending on how often the machine fails. So I'd aggregate that raw data to an hour level or day level, and then do feature engineering, and then do the prediction. So that's a step that I don't mention too much here, but it's important when you have this IoT kind of data, because you really do get so much data that you need to be really conscious of what you put into the model and how you aggregate the data before you put it in there. So some just more example feature engineering, rolling aggregates, lag features for the short term, lag features for the long term. So these are really just basically creating extra columns in your training data set that the machine learning model can build on. And you really want to capture features create features that capture that degradation over time. So here are a few relatively simple modeling techniques, things that you can do for predictive maintenance use cases. So binary classification is a framework of models where you can predict failures within a certain period of time. So for instance, if I want to predict, you know, which machine, will the machine fail in the next 7 days? I would then use a binary classification method to address that question. Regression type models, so like linear regression or boosted decision tree regression, are models that I would use to predict use cases such as what is the remaining useful life. So that's like the one I showed in the demo, the amount of time before the next failure. Multi-class classification are models where you might want to do things like predict failures along with their causes. So which cause is this going to be, what's the root cause of this failure? Also, you might want to predict remaining useful life within ranges of future periods. So is it going to predict and fail in the next week and then next month? And you might want to use actually ordinal multi-class models for those kind of problems. And then anomaly detection methods, I mentioned earlier, but are really useful for two main scenarios. One is for when you don't have failures. So anomaly detection can be used to identify trends or weird things that might be happening. So if you don't actually have failures, but you want to say, you know, what's going on? I have so much data. Can you tell me, is there something weird going on? I don't want to just have to hard code many different thresholds for these different sensors. Now, I might have 100 sensors, and it would be so hard to go in and look at each one to say, you know, this sensor, if it goes above this threshold, you know, then you alert. And so anomaly detection is a smarter method that can actually learn from the data and then say, what is that threshold? And that threshold can be actually adaptive over time. So I want to say, you know, based on what I've seen over the last month, alert me if something weird is happening with that sensor. And then if something changes, maybe that sensor value goes up. You know, once I've been alerted to that fact, I want to learn that that's actually the new level. So be adaptive about what that threshold is over time. And I mentioned earlier through talking through this how I went about actually labeling the data for modeling, but here I just show a picture in more detail. So the training data, as I mentioned, was run to failure data. So how I created that remaining useful life label, which the machine learning model is built to predict, I take the maximum value of the cycle. So there's all the flights at cycle 192 is when it actually failed. And then I take that, and you know, one minus that is the remaining useful life for the first cycle, and then I go downwards. So that is how I build the label for that model. So that would be, I would do that and I'd apply a regression type of technique. Then label one and label two are showing examples of how you might do a binary classification if I want to predict, you know, whether the it's going to fail in the next 30 days, for example, or in the next 15 or 30 days. So those are just some examples of how you might go about labeling the data. And these are, I should say, these are very simplistic methods. I just want to show you the concept. There's definitely a lot more sophisticated methods that you could use. For example, survival analysis is one of my favorite techniques to predict the timing of failure events, accounting for censoring. So these are some simplistic techniques, although I think they can also get the job done. And this is just to go over the ML process. I think when I was walking through this, I went through this all, but the ML process, you can think of it on one hand, defining the objective, understanding the data, and pre-processing it. And then comes when you're actually starting to train the model. Now, in training the model, you have that historical data that's built on features and labels. Those features are your input. The labels are those, how I just showed labeling the data. Then you split the data into training and testing. Now, the NASA data that I showed here actually was pretty nice, and they actually separated it automatically for us. But in real scenarios, what you would do is you would take your historical data and split it so that you could train a model on a subset of data and then test how well did that model do on that holdout data set. So that just tells you how can I generalize the model. You don't want to overfit to that data and then not have it be a generalizable model. Now, once I've trained the model, the scoring basically puts a label on it, and then you can evaluate how well you do by comparing the labels that you've predicted with the labels that it actually was. Then once you've created that model, you then deploy it on the right. So you take the future data, which obviously only has features, and you use those features along with that trained model to get your prediction results. Okay, so I want to leave you 5 minutes for questions. I want to leave you with one quote and one thing to keep in mind coming out of this demo is that this is what people say a lot. So the people say, you know, most IoT data are not used. The data that are used are mostly for anomaly detection and control, not optimization and prediction, which provide the greatest value. Now, well, I actually agree with this. Controlling and understanding the data that you have is often a really great first step. But what I want you to keep in mind is that even if this is all you're trying to do, that controlling and visualizing the results that you have, it's important to think about what you might want to do with the data in the future, because it takes a long time to collect the right kind of data to be able to do these kinds of things as a real scenario. So really think carefully about things like, you know, like I mentioned about the non-IoT data. Think carefully about what data are you collecting. Could I use this for machine learning in the future? Even if you're not planning on doing machine learning for, you know, 2-3 years down the line, you have to think carefully about what data you're collecting and how it could be used in the future. So that's just one thing to keep in mind. So with that, I think I'm done. So some go-dos is the Azure Machine Learning Gallery actually has a predictive maintenance template that shows what we did here with the NASA data. So you can go check that out and see what we did. And then some acknowledgments. Obviously, we use the publicly available NASA data set. And then the quote was from McKinsey. So thanks. So I have 5 minutes for questions, if people have questions.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think I turned you off in the models in the gallery. Mm-hmm.
Anybody here?
Okay, good to know. Yes, sounds great. There's also a lot of, if you search in the gallery, there's a lot of things that are predictive maintenance. So maybe it's not mine.
No, actually, that was probably yours, right?
Oh, okay. See? No, thanks, though. Yeah, sounds good. Yeah?
So like in numbering detection, so it's not only the feature predicting you're talking about, the expected value of finding what is this, because we don't even have the failures in our code. So would we have any method that how we are testing the anomaly detection?
What's behind the anomaly detection?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's actually a really great blog on TechNet that Alok and Vijay wrote. So if you search TechNet, and I can help you find that, There's a great blog that talks about the anomaly detection. There's a in the Azure Marketplace, there's an anomaly detection API. So you can actually use that API directly without even building a model in Studio. Now, I will say that method is for unidimensional cases. So if you have like a stream of sensors, you could apply that anomaly detection API to that stream of sensors. If you wanted to do fancier anomaly detection that did something like take these three sensor values over time and tell me what's weird about all three at once, then you'd have to build something custom. But there is an anomaly detection API in the marketplace, and there's a good blog that's written about it and what's behind the scenes on how it does that. Yep, TechNet, yep. Yep. Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, so that's a good clarification. So the stream, the data that was streaming through Event Hub was simulated based on the NASA data. So the NASA data only gave us one row per flight. So what we did is we actually disaggregated that data and created a data generator that simulated what would happen with a real aircraft based on that NASA data. Yep. Oh, in the back.
I have the micro, so.
Yay, we can all hear you.
My question was, now you predicted when it should fail, but can you also predict when there starts being a risk to fail?
Yeah, that's a great question. So can you start, the key would be that you build the model to predict that instead. So if there's some other indicator, and that's actually often what we do in real scenarios because we don't have failure data. Like in real scenarios, they might, you know, hopefully the engines aren't failing all the time in aircrafts. So they might take those out of service when there's some indicator of failure. So to do that, we would build the machine learning model using those indicators as our labels. So we can definitely do that, and it would be how you took your data set and built the model. So you'd have to transform the data to actually predict that.
And it's about Microsoft products. Can you take into account that a false negative is much heavier than the other one?
Yeah, that's a great question. So the is a false negative worse than a false positive in weighting? So we do that often through sampling techniques. If you want to do a custom weight functions and things like that, you could use an R or Python package. Yep.
One of the common questions which our data scientist team has is that they want to use as many variables as possible before mm-hmm. coming down to that of a prediction. And in reality is that you're not going to have the source data or model data available to have so many variables. Like we have a common scenario where we need to predict how many parts will be asked for replacement by next winter. So mm-hmm. in that kind of a scenario, they need as many variables as possible. How do you deal with those kind of situations where you actually will not have those particular source data for those kind of pieces?
Yeah. So I did mention those like six buckets of data, and almost no customers have all six. so that I totally agree with you. So you build the model based on whatever you have. Now it might not be good enough, and that's the reality that you have to deal with. And you can see that when you're training the model, you can evaluate how well you're doing. And depending on the scenario, you know, maybe just doing 5% better than random chance is freaking awesome, and you can go away because that you're done. But other times you really need to have a great model. So I think you build based on what you have, and you can evaluate the model to see, you know, is it hitting that baseline measure of accuracy that I need in order for this to be actionable in the business?
So it's like a rinse and repeat mini.
Yeah. Okay, I think I'm out of time. Thank you all. If you have more questions, feel free to come up.